Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So this is really a sad, sad day for the United States Senate. And if we don't pull back from the brink here, my friend, the majority leader, is going to be remembered as the worst leader of the Senate ever.
Mitch has said, I'm not making this up, he is the proud guardian of gridlock.
Take a guess what they're fighting about now. Congress's failure to act on comprehensive immigration reform, or gun control, or ending the sequester? Nope. They're talking about filibustering executive branch nominees. Senate Leader Harry Reid, who you heard second there, put the nuclear option, as they call it, on the table, which just means changing the rules to require a simple majority rather than a supermajority. We heard Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, before him. And senators met last night to try to hash it out. And afterwards, they announced that they've resolved nothing. There is a scheduled vote for this hour, so we'll keep an eye on that. Meanwhile, they were able to pass the farm bill, but with one major thing missing, the food stamp program. It was taken out of the bill, where it had resided since 1973. So we'll get into what that means for people on food stamps. Joining us for today's installment of Congressional Dysfunction Watch is Stephen Dennis from Roll Call. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be here.
So this idea of a simple majority for certain executive branch nominees, on the face of it, most Americans are going to yawn. It's going to sound technical and bureaucratic and wonky. Doesn't sound like the Big Bang that started the world. So why is changing that rule nicknamed the nuclear option?
Well, that name came from from 2005, when the situation was reversed, when the Republicans were in the majority, Democrats were in the minority, and, you know, Harry Reid, among others, were leading efforts to filibuster court nominations, lifetime appointments. And the Republicans at the time wanted to change the rules with a simple majority and basically say you can't filibuster court appointments anymore. And that was averted. The Democrats called that the nuclear option at the time, saying that it would destroy the Senate, that you would basically no longer have filibusters. It would lead to the end of the Senate as we know it. It would no longer be a deliberative body. It would basically be run with an iron fist with 51 votes. And that didn't come to pass in 2005. The nuclear option was averted.
Why not? Why did the Republicans back off?
Well, there was a gang of 14 back then, seven Republicans, seven Democrats, that sort of forged a deal, came back from the brink, basically said that filibusters would only happen in sort of extreme circumstances for judicial nominees. And they pulled back from the brink. But a lot of those senators aren't around anymore. They're sort of the old senators, the old guard that sort of tried to keep the chamber a collegial chamber. It's a much more partisan chamber nowadays. As a result, you have a lot more filibusters, and you also have fewer people sort of coming together to form some kind of gang to preserve the old Senate rules. And we're gonna see a test of that in about 45 minutes.
So you know what I'm curious about? Why is the Democratic Party digging in over these nominees to things like the National Labor Relations Board and the Consumer Protection Bureau, the Financial Consumer Protection Bureau, rather than the same issue that came up last time, judicial nominees? I think President Obama has had an even harder time getting judges through the Senate than President Bush did, and I could argue that that's a lot more important than these other nominees.
Well, when you go with the judicial nominee route, that's a double-edged sword. Democrats could conceivably be in the minority and wanting to filibuster a Supreme Court pick themselves. And there's no nominee right now that is that they view as absolutely critical, like a Supreme Court pick, that they want to change the rules for. There might be some picks down the line. There's three nominees to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So you could see another sort of version of the nuclear option months down the line. But that's not really ripe at this point, because the president just named those nominees not long ago. So that's sort of teeing up for something in the future. Right now, these picks, the Democrats have a pretty good case on. These NLRB appointments have been waiting for years to get a vote up or down in the Senate. And in particular, the Richard Cordray, who's going to be the first vote up this morning, the national, he's the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He's basically been in the job for a couple of years, but he hasn't been able to get a vote on formal confirmation.
That's that new office in the Dodd-Frank law that Wall Street hates, and Republicans are resisting basically anybody going into that job, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a filibuster version of the nuclear option. They've basically said, no matter who you appoint, you could theoretically appoint the second coming of Jesus, and it would not be enough. You know, they've said nobody will we will filibuster anybody for that position, no matter how qualified.
Yeah, because they oppose the law. And what about the National Labor Relations Board positions in that respect? Because those have gone unfilled since the beginning of the Obama administration, haven't they? What are the Republicans trying to protect there?
Well, the NLRB, you know, has a lot of power when it comes to labor relations. And it's no secret the two parties are very far apart on whether you want more union rights and more union protections and more worker protections or not. And the Republicans don't want the NLRB to be out there policing for unions. And so that's been a sticking point. The Democrats say that the Republicans are effectively engaging in nullification of just saying, well, we wish the NLRB didn't exist. The Republicans say, look, these particular appointments are disputed. They're currently the subject of a court case that's going to the Supreme Court over recess appointments.
That's just about when the president can make the appointments.
Exactly. And the Republicans... But the Republicans have made it clear they don't want these particular nominees. Now, at this point, there's an effort to try and see if they can come up with some kind of accommodation where basically these nominees would go forward, but they want Harry Reid to promise that he won't use the nuclear option in the future, and I don't think Harry Reid's going to go there.
Sounds like we have the plutonium option on one side of the aisle and the uranium option on the other side of the table. Let's talk about the farm bill, which did pass, hooray, but without a key element, the food stamp program, formerly called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. What happened?
Well, it's going to go to conference. The House Republicans were at war with themselves. Some of their more conservative elements and some outside groups wanted deep cuts in the food stamp program. The leadership did not want huge cuts to the food stamp program. They probably couldn't pass huge cuts to the food stamp program, even among their own members. There's a divide between more moderate Republicans and more conservative Republicans. They tried to go to the floor with a $21 billion cut. And keep in mind, it's about a $750 billion program over 10 years, so it's about a 2 or 3% cut. But, yes, it is a cut. They couldn't get support for it. Their own members, the conservatives, abandoned the bill. They wanted much deeper cuts. And so Republicans came back to the floor without food stamps at all. And ironically, the result, they were able to pass it with only Republican votes because the Democrats say, how dare you pass a bill without food stamps? But the reality is that's probably going to be better for the food stamp program in the end. A number of Republicans have suggested that what's going to end up happening is they're ultimately going to have to take the Senate's offer on food stamps for a very small cut, $4 billion over 10 years out of a $700 billion program. And so it looks like that's what's going to happen, something much closer to the Senate proposal, because the House is going to have no real leverage in conference. Because they're not really going to say, you know what, we're not going to have any bill at all. And the Senate Democrats have been saying this week there's no way that they will agree to any conference that doesn't have their version or something very close to their version of the food stamp program.
Although when asked whether food stamps would be dealt with, House Speaker John Boehner said this.
Oh, if hands and butts were candy and nuts, every day would be Christmas. You've heard that before. My goal right now is to get the Farm Bill passed. We'll get to those issues later.
So maybe it's a little unfair to call it offensive because he probably didn't even really realize he was doing it, comparing basic nutrition for hungry people to candy and nuts on Christmas. But why would the Tea Party conference go along with anything? Why wouldn't they take kind of a nuclear option on this and say, hey, Senate, you know, you can take your food stamps bill with minimal cuts and do what you want with it, because we know that a lot of unneedy people are on food stamps, at least from the Tea Party perspective.
Well, the reason why it's going to be easy to pass the Farm Bill when it comes back to the House is because Democrats are going to vote for it. The reason why the Farm Bill failed initially is unrelated, really. There were a couple of conservative amendments that House Republican leaders let the conservatives put on the bill and were basically poison pills for the Democrats. So the Democrats abandoned the bill on the floor, said, look, you passed these poison pill amendments. We're not going to go for them. In conference, it's going to be a deal that the Senate Democrats are going to be okay with. You're going to get a lot of Democratic votes. And so they can lose, you know, maybe 50, 60 Tea Party-related conservative Republicans,
but then doesn't
and they'll be okay.
But doesn't Speaker Boehner then have to break this cardinal rule that he won't bring anything to the floor that a majority of his majority won't support?
No, because he'll get at least 150, 160 votes for any farm bill that comes out of the Senate, and that's
food stamp
well
bill?
Over the Hastert rule hurdle of about 118.
By the way, about food stamps, the number of Americans on food stamps has really varied. We looked up some of the stats on this today. So during the Clinton years, the number of people on food stamps fell six straight years from about 27 million people in 1994 to 17 million people. That's a big drop. During the Bush years, from 2001 to 2009, the number of people on food stamps rose dramatically. It basically doubled from 17 million to 34 million Americans. And then since 2009, when President Obama came into office, it's gone from 33 million to 46 million. Of course, there's been the horrible economic downturn in those years. So what do you make of all of that? Does it actually follow need, or does it follow politics just as much?
Well, there's a couple of different things happening. Some of it's happening in the country, which means that there are a lot of people whose wages have not kept up with inflation, who are struggling at the bottom of the food chain, if it were, for lack of a better term. Another thing that's happened is, you know, states and governments have gotten better at signing people up who are eligible. That's a part of it. But, you know, you have a situation in the country right now, which I think may be unprecedented, where you have record corporate profits and Wall Street is, you know, setting new highs every single day. And yet unemployment remains closer to 8% than 7%. A lot of people are struggling to make ends meet. We're definitely seeing a bifurcation here between the folks who are the working poor who need those food stamps and the corporations who have never had it better. So it's sort of an interesting situation here. There's a philosophical discussion of whether the food stamp program has too many people on it, whether it breeds dependence. That's the Republican sense that it's too easy to stay on, it's too easy to get on, and people get sucked into a lifetime of dependence. And the Democrats say, look, even with the food stamp program, people are living, have to live off of very meager payments, and there are still millions of people who go hungry every night, even with the program. So there's definitely a big split over what to do about it.
And we'll talk next hour with Gail Collins from the New York Times about her observation that while the food stamp program, which couldn't pass, goes to poor people, the Farm Bill, which could pass, Those agriculture subsidies go to wealthy corporations. And we thank, by the way, Dan Gross and the Daily Beast for those food stamp stats. Stephen Dennis from Roll Call, before you go, back to the nuclear option in the Senate over the filibuster. If the nuclear option happens and they do take this vote to change the rules next hour, is there any chance of passing anything ever again in the Senate because there'll be even more bad blood between the parties than there is now?
Well, I think that's actually one of the reasons why it might happen, is because there's not much prospect of them doing anything anyways. You know, the Republican threat is that they will shut down the Senate and there will be nuclear winter and there's all kinds of talk of retaliation. But the reality is they've already stopped a lot of business in the Senate as it is. Could it get worse? Sure. It could always get worse. But if you look at the next 2 years in the legislative agenda, they already passed the big thing they really wanted to pass out of the Senate, which was immigration. And, you know, the other big thing is they have to keep the government running. So they have to have some kind of a spending bill, and it's doubtful the Republicans are going to block, you know, force a government shutdown over a rules change. So it's kind of hard to see where there would be some retaliation that the Democrats wouldn't necessarily then be tempted to say, well, okay, well, we're gonna use the nuclear option a lot more now if you guys keep retaliating. So there might be a few weeks of dysfunction, even more so than usual. But I'd kind of be surprised if it lasted much past the August recess.
Today's installment, the nuclear option edition of Congressional Dysfunction Watch. We thank Stephen Dennis from Roll Call for joining us. Stephen, thanks a lot.
Great to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, it's Five Pillars Week on The Brian Lehrer Show, a series of interfaith call-ins based on the five pillars of Islam during the holy month of Ramadan. Today, the concept of one God, with Reza Aslan, who wrote a book about Islam called No God But God. He has a new book called Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. So we'll talk Jesus, Muhammad, the concepts of prophets and God, and monotheism coming up next.